We are live again, and welcome back to another show of Can We Be Real? We are coming to you live this morning. We're expecting our guest to call in any moment now. And we're talking about this morning the documentary, The Throwaways, with Ira McKinley. This is your host, Carl White, and we are from Help Somebody right here in Atlanta on Blog Talk Radio. You can reach us at on Facebook. I'm Help Somebody, and we are also on Twitter at Help Somebody. This is more love. This is what we need right now. It looks like Brother Ira is on the phone with us. Are you here this morning?
Can you hear
Brother
me?
Ira McKinley. Yes, sir. I hear you now. How you doing
okay,
this morning?
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you very clearly.
Okay. All right. Well, we're here. We're excited about you and all that you're doing to make the story of the voiceless and giving them voices and helping those who have been ostracized, marginalized. Man, I was looking at your documentary and some of the clips from there. It is a fascinating story, and I believe that it is a story that needs to be told and is often not told. It's amazing how so many times people are treated like throwaway people. And if you wanted to share one thing that everybody needs to know about the documentary, what would you share this morning with us?
What would I share? That I know for me, myself, like being homeless and being in a situation where I felt like I had no value, I would want to share that, you know, even though that person that you might feel like is sitting there on the curb or, you know, who may be down and desperate and feel like he's lost, just needs somebody to say, I love you. And
yes,
with that being said, that I love you and that, brother, I care about you and, brother, I understand your pain, would just help that brother, you know, become something bigger than what he is. You know, I know when I was there and I felt like down in my dumps, I had to, you know, what I did, I got mad. I'm going to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I got mad because people were treating me like I was a throwaway, like I was a nobody. So I had to, like, yo, listen, I've been in, at that point in time, I already been in the Air Force. I had done some things and I knew what my value was. But I know how people looked at you, you know,
right.
Being in a situation like because of my incarceration and because of, and I would hate to say that because I was African-American male, you know, you have this stigma that's put on you.
Yes.
I just want them to know that, you know, that stigma is not what it is, what it is perceived to be, you know, it's
yes.
Like all the media attention is brought on, you know, those people or these people, you know, we have like the 99% who are, and we're at the bottom of the 99%, you know, I see
yeah.
Some of us, especially being African-American males. They
yeah.
Look at us like we're, you know, since Reagan years and all the welfare mothers, there's been this media cast on you that you're like worthless, you know.
Yes.
And he'd imprison these people because they're scared of us, you know, to tell you the truth. And I think that's been since we've been here, since they brought us here as slaves. They were amazed at our abilities to build, and as strong men, especially strong black men or men of color, they looked at us as somebody who, you know, they were fearful of. They seen the things we did from Egypt, you know, building the pyramids and all these other things. So the best way to keep us to the best way to break us was, you know, the Willie Lynch syndrome was to always feed us negative images, and that's going back from, like I said, the Willie Lynch syndrome, back from slavery.
So
and it was just used
just...
like. Go ahead.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of time, so let's focus in on more modern day context. And I understand the Willie Lynch syndrome and so forth, but a lot of the things you say are very, very, they're very poignant and they're very powerful, especially the black male image and how black males have been painted as being violent. But when some people are cast in a category of being throwaways, and they have, as you say, you know, many of us have done crime. I mean, Martha Stewart did time, okay? So a whole bunch of people have done crime. But with the black males, it seems like the throwaways are constantly propelled and promoted in media as being dangerous, as being violent, as being someone that's scared of. So why should, or what compels you to paint the throwaways or those who are treated less than in another light? Why should we give these people another chance?
I did, you know, 10 years ago, I came out of prison.
Yes.
And that was my debt to society was paid at that point.
Yes.
And the thing is that right now I see that because of that, we have been, you know, ostracized, and I can see how hard it is 10 years after coming out of prison, how hard it is for just me to let people see the goodness that I could bring to the table.
Yes.
I did a crime, I paid the time, and that was 10 years ago. But because of that, you know, when I go to fill an application for a job, when I was doing certain things, I could never, you know, quite get to the point where I wanted to be, what's the sense of the word? You know, I always offered was like low paying jobs. What
yes,
I knew I could
and,
do
and-
manager jobs. I could take care of a whole industry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was brought up through the Air Force and all these other things to do certain things like that. So for me to see how hard it is for me, somebody who already did my time, to come back in here and into society, try to get back into society and work and see just how hard it is just for me. And then knowing that, you know, these young black men that I see on the corners and all this other stuff, I know that they're already twice as hard because they haven't got the same education and the same drive that I have. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So they're already being ostracized. So what's left to them is they're in a catch-22. They're like, we're not going to give you a job. We're looking at you this certain way. So these young men are idolizing certain things that they see on BET, on MTV, and all these other things. And for me to say to them, listen, you need to know what's going on with the mass incarceration. There's something that's been in place. They're not going to give you a job. You know what I'm saying? You got to be like the greatest 1%. You got to work, as a young black man, you got to work 3 times harder than that next counterpart who may not be black and who may have a silver spoon in his life and have education. So you're already not getting that. So,
yes.
So therefore, you have to be strong in mind to understand what the responsibilities are. But what was happening now is that they're not educating nobody. They want to do that. You see what Romney's doing. He wants to cut down PBS. He wants to cut all this stuff. A lot of these kids grew up on Sesame Street. That's how they learn. I remember I was growing up with Scholastic Rock, you know, Junction, what's your function? That's how we learn. But we had better schooling, too, you know. So I was raised in an era where there was more focuses on community, where it's not being that way now. It's like a split. And
yes.
it's It's driven for these young men to not focus on what's really real, but what's something that's imaginary. Everybody can't be an entertainer, you know what I'm saying? Everybody can't be
a sports
baller.
Player. Yeah, right. Yeah. Everybody can't be an entertainer, sports player. Now, it's just, and it's to kind of keep on the same theme, speaking about community and looking at our communities when they are an abundance of low-paying jobs. And, yes, Martha Stewart was a felon, and when she came out of prison, she was able to go back on TV because of her celebrity, her acceptance, and she fit the status quo of what is, you know, what is promoted on TV. But even as a young man, I was told by my elders that, son, you're going to have to work twice as hard to get half as far. And I didn't believe it. But unfortunately, as I've lived over these last half of a century, I've seen those things that come to be true. But even still, even in your case and in my case and many other cases, we did not fall out the system. We continued to survive in spite of maybe having a criminal record or in spite of not getting the best job, in spite of not having the best opportunities. So in that case, because what I like to do is focus on solutions. I mean, we can pull up the problems all day. I mean, sometimes I don't even watch the news because of all of the negativity that's promoted. And for some of these young brothers who's on the corner who feel like when Biggie and P. Diddy, they did an album said No Way Out. And what do you say to a cat that says that, man, there ain't no way out?
I would say to them that there is a way out, and it's there's an old African saying, it takes a village to raise a child, and in my documentary, that's what we go back to. We start off like, okay, I'm going to follow the Occupy movement. I think that was the one thing that was hot. I mean, we started our documentary, it was in 2 years in the making, and I started before the Occupy movement even happened. So to me, when I seen that and I seen people standing up, I got a little bit of hope, you know. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to follow this. I'm going to see where this leads me. So I went to I did go to Atlanta. I went to D.C. I went to North Carolina. I went to Ithaca, New York when I was raised. And all I seen was how they suppressed it, the same way they did with the Black Panthers, who did a lot of great things for their community. And this is what it's about. It's about community. What was wrong to me with the Occupy movement was that I told them when it first started, because I was around when it first started, and I was telling them, listen, this movement will not be successful. Those who are oppressed are not in the forefront of this movement. You know, to me, it got taken over again by the white male power structure, and I was telling them from the beginning, you white males need to step back. You let the women and the people of color lead this movement. It didn't happen, so. What happened was it became something that people were bickering over what was the most important thing to be, you know, involved in at that point in time. When I seen
and
that,
I
had to step off.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I had to step off, and what I seen was because I had already got involved with Michelle Alexander, who wrote the book The New Jim Crow, and
yes.
All these other people like Angela Davis, Mumia Abu-Jamal, and all these other people, I'm like, you know what? I can recognize with that because I was in prison. I've seen what it was. I was there when the World Trade Center went down in New York City. I was in prison at that time. And I know what it felt like to be somewhere like a caged animal with nowhere to go. So I said, let me go with this movement. And that's when I really got involved with the mass incarceration thing, saying, listen, I understand that they're building more prisons and putting and who they need to put in these prisons, the ones that are not educated. So there's a thing. So there's a reason why they're doing things. They're not going to educate you because you have no hope. And so, therefore, if you don't have any hope and you have no skills, you're going to do something that they're going to make illegal, you know, to survive.
Right, right. Right, and you bring up a very valid point, is that there's a lot of low-paying or no-paying jobs in the communities of color and poor people, but there's always a flood of drugs. There's always a flood of guns. And I believe the Reagan administration declared a war on drugs. But like you said, the Black Panther Party is gone, forsake. But these drugs tons of drugs still come across our borders, and they want to stop people who want to come across the borders to work, but you can't stop tons of cocaine ships because Shaniqua and Pookie and Lil Froggy and them, they don't have no ships, no planes. They don't have no gun manufacturing shops. But if you look in the penitentiary system, they comprise anywhere from 50 to 55% of the inmate population and less than 15% of the whole United States population. So the war on drugs was not necessarily a war on drugs. It was more of a war on drug users. And that's one of the problems. And then in essence, they've taken you out of the system because you can't vote in some states, in many states. And then oftentimes when you're so disenfranchised, when you don't care about, you know, when you become hopeless, when you say that, well, ain't no need in me doing nothing. And then we have extreme examples of violence, like that young man that went in the movie theater and on the Batman movie theater. And that was just terrible. It's horrendous. And the thing is that can happen to anyone. And the problem is oftentimes is that people are pushed to the point to do those kind of things. Other times they're sick. Other times they have mental problems. But there's something ought to be wrong when I can go buy an AR-15 rifle with a 30-round clip and order 6,000 rounds of ammunition. And it's cool.
Yeah.
And it's cool.
You know, Go ahead.
And it doesn't raise any flags. But one of the things that that brought up that young men, especially like when you come out of the penitentiary, it's hard to for those to be getting any kind of jobs. One of the things that they've done, they've got a program up in Oregon and Washington, and we're actually they teach them entrepreneurial skills. They teach them how to run their own business, because if you can run drugs underground, you can run a business legitimately.
Mm-hmm. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What I wanted to say to that is that what you just mentioned about the guy spraying in the theater. I showed like last week. I showed the documentary to a class at RPI college class. You know, I'm trying to use this as an educational tool.
Right.
So, and they're rich. You know, I won't say they're rich, but they're well-to-do because that's a institute of technology. So, the people there have money. They're coming from money, and I'm showing them a different side of. You know, you maybe come from this community, but this is what's real in my community. And the guy was like, well, one guy was like, I don't understand that. He made a comment, and then he made a comment about Columbine. And he made a comment about, you know, the violence.
Yeah.
And I had to point out to him, I said, listen, you don't see too many black people or people of color going into these places shooting up the place. You know, the only thing I can remember is probably the D.C. sniper. That happened to be the one black guy that I can remember that just was going out there randomly shooting people.
Right.
But the thing is, we may, and this is the thing that we need to stop, but I put it in the documentary. We do a lot of black-on-black crime.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Now
we
that,
may
that
kill
that's
each
huge.
Other.
Right.
Yes. But we ain't going out there and getting mad because it was something, you know, that the politicians or what's going on did to us, and going into a theater or school and killing everybody because somebody bullied us. That's not that's not the makeup of the stuff that you see. So
go ahead. Yeah,
I just wanted to make that point was that listen, we may be oppressed and we may be down, but we are. Like, we're trying to, what I'm trying to do is, like, look, show that mirror. Listen, this is what's going on. This is what we need to do, you know. Like, you know, you said one of the solutions to this, to me, is go green. You know, we need to go back to green ecology and, you know, because I'm up here in the north. So I'm not in Atlanta. I'm not in Georgia. You know, I got family there, so I know, and my mother was born there, But up here in the north, you know, you got a lot of things that you have to deal with. I mean, you got a low-paying job, and then because of that low-paying job, it's, you know, either pay your rent or pay your heating bill. You know what I'm saying? But if we had the green energy and we had solar energy and all this other stuff going that's going green, like you see what they're doing in Detroit with feeding that people in a desolate place with all the car companies. So, how are we going to feed these masses? Let's grow our own food. Let's do certain things. Let's go green. That's a solution to the problem. You know what I'm saying? And so what I'm into is like getting healthy eating, because where I'm at is a food desert. You know, there's no healthy eating places here. That tends for diabetes, high blood pressure, all these things, because we're not getting the right food. That's one of the things they do. So they're killing us with a lot of things, that's against us. And
go ahead.
No, and to me, they're reaping the rewards because they're in a community that has all these things to their hand. And where I'm at, like, when you go right outside my door right here, this community art center where I'm at, there's a liquor store right across the street. There's a Chinese foods place. There's a McDonald's. But there's nothing where I can get no healthy food, you know what I'm saying, the fruits and vegetables. So if we grow this ourselves, we take away that demand. We start eating healthy. We start lowering our blood pressure. We start... You're not having the diabetes problems, you know, all these things that are associated with us. And it's by plan. It's a thing that's by plan to keep you down and keep you in there, like everything. So when you get high blood pressure and diabetes, now you got to go to their doctor. They're not giving you any medical coverage. You know what I'm saying? So it's a caste system to keep you down. And people need to wake
up. You know, historically in this country, we weren't allowed as black folks to go to doctors or even to use certain hotels and water fountains and so forth. But as you said, too, it was the community that stuck together. And the community now is not sticking together because of competition among the members. And we are, you know, like the crab in the barrel mentality. A lot of times there's such few amount of resources in the community that people are beginning to fight among the members when they need to band together to make it work. But one of the things that feeds this thing, and I think you ought to kind of think about this one, and even in your documentary, is this statement, is that we've become consumed by consumerism. Now what we have is not good enough anymore. I have to have the latest Lincoln or the latest Cadillac or the biggest house or the freshest Jordans or, you know, the latest eyewear, the latest, you know, whatever it is. And so one of the things that brings us to this is that if we can control where we spend our money. And see, one of the things, too, that is brought up is that oftentimes, the very thing that makes people so powerful is also their weakness.
Mm-hmm.
So in our society, money is king. In God we trust, all the rest of y'all pay cash, okay? So you got to have that money. Even after the 9/11 attacks that you mentioned, the World Trade Centers, that when they fell down, man, I was looking at those things and I immediately thought about the Desert Inn and also the Kingdom. The Desert Inn in Vegas, when they leveled that, man, it fell straight down. When they fell the Kingdom in Seattle, it fell straight down. Those towers went down, they fell straight down. So the similarities are just there. I said, man, what the heck happened to those buildings? And so it was more to it than what is promoted. But even after the 9/11 text, then President Bush was asked, what can we do as people, the average people? And that was during the time, you also remember, where the government was promoting fear. It's level red, level orange, level green, level yellow. And what's the difference between a yellow and an orange? What does that mean to me? And it's other than, I'm about to be attacked, or I've got to get this survival mode, I've got to get into this attack mode. And the thing is, what President Bush said at that time, which is key and it's insightful, he said, go shopping. Go back to the malls. Just go shopping. And so if we can control our spending, if we can band together and, like you say, put together little areas where we can collectively grow vegetables and have co-ops and, you know, create a new way of working together that is not competitive among the members, then the large corporations, when they start to see those dollars not coming in there, then they'll stop feeding us with all this junk.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. And you know that it's called propaganda. It was something that was used during World War II, and it was used effectively. So, you know, the Hitler and all this other stuff. So they learned from it, and they're using it. They're using that propaganda on their own people. And that to me is what's sickening, you know.
Yeah, it is.
To know that we are sitting up here in this day and age, and, you know, we're being dumbed down. We're being dumbed down. There's nobody. Like I told some of these brothers, I said, You want to do like I did, and you want to come up, you know what I'm saying, with your own values and your own,
right,
playing by your own rules. I said, yeah, you got a state library. There's a state library, Carl, right, like two blocks from where I'm at.
Okay. Okay.
Research.
Research.
Go there and read.
No library card. No. No.
All they have is some sort of ID to get the book out.
Right.
They could go in there and get on the computer. There's like 40 computers in that state library. It has all the archives from the state, everything. Everything you need is right there.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Republicans talk about, you know, closing down the libraries and all that, that's to me is like because they want you to be stupid. So therefore, you know, you're going to do this just like what Koch Industries says. If Obama gets elected, then you're going to lose your job. Now, that's playing on fear right there.
Right, right. That's, and the whole thing. And Ira, man, we're going to have to do another show. We're down to the last 2 minutes. Tell me where the time
is. Yeah, I see
goes.
That. I'm looking at your thing. That's 3 minutes.
I don't know.
Second.
So your,
and
your
you know what? It went
thought.
By.
Go ahead. Your final thoughts.
My final thoughts is that, like I said, it takes a village to raise a child. And that's what I learned through this process of this documentary. It's like, my thing is that I've been reading about Stokely Carmichael, Mumia, the Black Panthers, the things that they did in civil rights and what was successful. And the thing was is that didn't happen overnight, you know, and I tried to tell them, I say this in the documentary, I say it in Atlanta. I said, Martin Luther King started in 1955 on the bus, and by the time he was assassinated 13 years later, he was still fighting for the people.
Yes, yes,
saying,
yes.
Don't think that stuff is going to happen overnight. You guys got to realize that there's going to be powers that be. They're going to talk about us. They're going to do things about us. They don't want to shut us down because we're talking about taking the money away from them and empowering ourselves. So you got to be real. You got to be we're going to go through hard times. And to me, I've been through hard times for the last 10, 15 years. And part of my story is my father got shot and killed by a cop. I done been beat up by cops. Through this process, I done seen about 4 black men being shot in New York City, here in Albany, and where I'm from, Ithaca, New York. So to me, it's like a scourge. If you speak up, they're going to try to do certain things to keep you down. They did it during the Civil Rights Movement. They're going to do it now. But we
now,
have to be strong and keep together and stick together. And like what they did with the bus boycott, everybody started walking. You got to, like, that's what you got to do. You know what I'm saying? You got to take power out of their hands.
Yes, yes. Bringing it together is the key. And even Dr. King, he spoke to us about our religions. We got 90 seconds. And Dr. King said, a religion that is true to its nature must also be concerned about men's social conditions. Any religion that professes to be concerned with the souls of men and not concerned with the slums that damn them, the economic conditions that strangle them, and the social conditions that cripple them is a dry-ass dust religion. Such a religion is the kind the markets like to see, an opiate of the people. And you've been listening to another episode of Can We Be Real? That's the question is, can we be real? Can we stand up and make a difference to help somebody? Pull your resources together. Break down the barriers. Deal with people who are known to you. Make make a use of libraries and the information that is available. Control the controllables, what's in your hand. This is Carl White. We've been talking to Ira McKinley on the show, even with the Throwaways movie. Make sure you see it, go support it, do what you can to build up our communities, because even as we make a difference in the lives of others, so our lives will be improved. And that's the key to this thing. We've got to begin to help each other and make a difference. This is Carl White. Look me up on Facebook. I'm Help Somebody. We need love. And yo, that's a fact. Send a little love out and you get it right back.